Hello, Cleaning Nation. Welcome back. It is good to be with you. It is time to have some fun, soak up some wisdom, and get everything you need to grow your cleaning company. If you are out there and you love the show, your life is better as a member of Cleaning Nation. Show us the love. Share the show with friends, family, Facebook, all that good stuff. Feel free to join the Facebook group. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, all that good stuff. Be a proud member of Cleaning Nation. Today, we are chatting with Dave Fullinger, president of the Jack Lorre Group. Jack Lorre was founded in 1950. At the beginning, they started with Jack, a part-time helper, a rented garage, and an old Chesterfield cigarette truck. So they're off to a big start. Today, they've grown into six divisions. Most recently, they started a commercial cleaning division in 2013, which has grown in that short time to nearly 85 employees. If you want to reach out to Dave and his team, you can get a hold of them at www.jacklorregroup.com. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I got to be honest with you, Cleaning Nation, before we started, he and I were chatting, and he pretty much gave me all the interesting stuff, so we're just going to skip the intro and go, no, just kidding. Dave, you were giving me all the good stuff in terms of how you guys started, a little bit of the background, and it was pretty much all good. So if you want to take a couple minutes and just share with Cleaning Nation how y'all got where you're at, it was a great story.
Sure. Well, like you said, Jack started as a commercial flooring installer back in 1950. Over the years, that evolved into residential flooring. It evolved into other contracting type of services. And back in 1998, there was a big roll-up attempt. Three big players in our industry tried to consolidate the industry. So different service providers, dealers were aligning and being gobbled up by these different companies. And we aligned with one of the players, DuPont Corporation. And at the time, they were the largest manufacturer of commercial nylon, which goes into commercial carpet. So they were looking for a dedicated channel for their nylon. And they recognized that, you know, one of the tough things about being in the commercial flooring industry is flooring lasts, you know, 7, 10, 12 years. And so to maintain customer relationships for that long a time, can be very difficult. People change jobs, things like that. And so being a chemical company, Pont was one of the first, if not the first, inventor of the encapsulation chemistry. And so as part of the offering, we got started in 98-ish in just floor care. So we would take care of carpets and we would put acrylic finish on VCT, things like that. Over the years, we would bump our head against with customers where, you know, hey, our janitorial provider provides this floor care. And we said, oh, you know, we don't offer a full commercial cleaning service. And so about 2013, we said, hey, this really is a gateway for us to maintain these relationships with customers. It can keep us in front of customers daily, and it can be this conduit to sell all these other products and services that we have. So we got into the full-blown janitorial service along with specialty floor care. And like you said, we've grown from zero to about 85 employees today.
Yeah, and I was, before we started, I was trying to give Dave a hard time with, oh man, sorry, you got, you know, with six divisions, you probably got more fun P&Ls to look after. And so I was like, you know, hey, sorry, you got stuck with a boring one. And he kind of said, you had mentioned, Dave, yeah, no, that's a driver of a lot of the other divisions. So it seems like that's kind of the entry point that you're able to do a lot of things with those same customers.
Yeah, it's really the tip of the spear in our strategic vision, because it is that gateway to really grab those customer relationships. And if we already have that relationship in place, we already have a contract in place, well, then our sales force is basically already being paid to be there and to deepen those relationships, get them wider, explore what other products and services we can sell them.
Yeah, and for the kind of Cleaning Nation regulars, you're going to notice I'm not a big fan of doing a bunch of things at once. I'm constantly pounding the niche. That is one way I love growing, is selling more things to the same niche as opposed to starting over and going out and finding a whole new niche with a whole different set of pains and a whole different kind of stratosphere of influencers and needs and all the dynamics that touch into that. So I love that you guys kind of just organically grew in terms of we need this product, we've identified a problem, and we're going to attack this vertical, which is a different set of services, but really the same customer, as opposed to what most folks would do is I'm just going to go start another customer, and then they're constantly in that learning curve and never in that, hey, we're just going to sit back and make profits kind of mode.
Right.
Right.
Well, yeah, and I guess I could say, boy, I wish we just had that idea, you know, off the cuff. But boy, we've thought of every way to ruin a company. You know, we did have geographic expansion and, you know, the control challenges and the cash challenges and all that kind of stuff in our history. But since about 2003, you know, after the blip in the dot-com thing, we said, you know what, we know the state of Indiana. We've got locations in Fort Wayne and Indianapolis, so we can basically service the entire state. Let's know those customers and sell them these other products and services, as opposed to biting off other pieces of geography, because yeah, we've made plenty of mistakes doing that.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about a podcast. So when you encapsulate 20 years of banging your head against the wall and trial and error and just go right to there, you sound like a genius. Like, wow, these guys got it right off the bat. Well, it's all about creative editing. Well, hey, thank you for sharing. Really, that's one of the more interesting kind of backstories I get. And it's so funny. We've done over 200 shows and I haven't heard a single duplicate in terms of how we got into the janitorial business. It's always not what you'd expect, and there's just a thousand ways in. Glad to have you. All right, well, enough of me beating you up for information. How can I help, man? What's going on in your business today that I can hopefully bring some value to you?
Yeah, so as with a lot of businesses, we have a sales force, and you can sell reactively, which is bidding, and wait for customers to need something, or you can be proactive. And I definitely prefer proactive, because on the bid side, it really reduces your service to a commodity. The primary, maybe not the only, but the primary differentiator becomes price. And, you know, it's also attractive to salespeople sometimes, because it's easy. They're already asking for a number, as opposed to really exploring pain and matching services to that. And to do that, you need a value proposition. And that is one thing that we still struggle with, is how do you develop, communicate to your sales force and get them to have the confidence to sell via a value proposition versus, hey, do you need a number?
Man, that is such good stuff. I'm actually taking another note as we go, because I've got so much stuff I don't want to forget. Yeah, and I warned you beforehand that you're going to get a rant, and here it comes, because I am... You just hit on one of my favorite things to talk about. So first of all, we've touched on this before. I kind of do it when I'm speaking in front of live audiences. I'll do the best I can here. I always start with the iceberg analogy with, you know, if you can picture the tip of the iceberg, obviously above the water, very small, lots of open air, and then below the water, lots of iceberg, you know, just below the surface. So how that looks is so many people want to sell above the iceberg. And what that looks like is there's that one customer who's popped his head above the water and said, hey, I'd like a bid, I'd like an RFP. And there's 300, you know, I don't want to say vultures, but 300 of our fine competitors out there with the same idea. And because that's the circumstance we find ourselves in, they've written the RFP, they've kind of set the rules. There's really been no opportunity to add value other than give me a number. That price is typically made based on the standards they've set in the RFP, which could be good or poor. We don't know, because we just showed up, and price. In a vacuum, mm-hmm. price is all we have a difference. I just got a bid for carpet for we're buying a new house, and there's three bids. One was, I don't know, $600. One was $1,000. One was $1,500. But I'm not a carpet expert. I had no freaking idea what the difference between one or the other is. So I'm like, well, what kind of idiot would not take the $600 one? Well, because you just emailed me to bid and didn't spend any time going over, well, what is it you need? What's important to you? Can I match the right product to the right thing? So in a vacuum, whether it's carpet or janitorial services with no other information, it's always going to be low price. And when people don't understand something, they generally either do nothing or pick the low price. So I love that you get that. Hey, we need to sell to people that are educated and understand the value proposition that we're offering. And even if it's not a fit, that's fine. But we don't want you to not choose us on. I'm okay with people not choosing me based on what I offer, not being a fit for what they want. I'm not okay with them making a bad decision because they don't understand the value proposition. So how that looks with the iceberg is, just like you said, Dave, a lot of the salespeople are attracted to that. I pop my head up. I want an RFQ. It's super easy just to crank out a number and let the chips fall where they may. But below the iceberg, the situation is reversed. There's hundreds or thousands, depending on your area, of customers and just two or three people selling to them. So the way that you move from the top of the iceberg with lots of competitors and one customer to many, 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 many customers and very few competitors is you understand the people below the waterline are people that are going to buy in the next year, or in your case, because you've got a larger sales cycle, in the next 2 or 3 years. So you start that conversation, you start the education process when they're not looking. So what happens is when you've got this constant stream of whether it be email or direct mail or Salesforce, or ideally some combination of all of those, you've got this constant stream of value that you're offering them. So when it is time to make a change in any of the services that you offer that they need, instead of going out to bid, ideally they're going to call Dave or someone on a sales team and say, hey, I've got to put this RFQ together. Can you help me do that? Because you've established yourself as an information source and a place of value, as opposed to just showing up as a Johnny come lately at the end of the deal. So I just wanted to, all that to say, I couldn't agree more, Dave, with your assessment of going out to bid, very difficult, bad positioning. Building that relationship beforehand and kind of being there before, during, and after makes it very hard to bid against and puts you in an enviable position. Any thoughts on that before we move on?
Well, no, I mean, we're in exact agreement. You know, the bid opportunities, and we see it on the construction side as well as the cleaning side. It's what I call a fair fight, and, you know, fair fights are tough because that's just people slugging it out. And so we want to tip the scales and truly add value, not just to win the work, but if you actually win it on value, you keep the work, because now you're in there and you've educated the customer, and they start to see that, hey, I don't compare competitor X to Jack Lurie Group because they just can't be compared. There's this unique value proposition that has not been matched in the market.
Yeah, such a great, and that's, it's so funny we're on the same track, because that's exactly where I'm going next. So we want to make sure that we're in that conversation. We're building that relationship well before the RFQ comes out to bid. So when it does go out to bid, if we do it right, it never goes out to bid. They just come to us and say, hey, we've been in relationship for so long. Let's just work this out. We don't need all those other people. Next would be, hey, I need some consultation. Can you walk me through this process? And then, of course, the worst part is you're just brand new. You don't know them. They don't know you. You're just a guy and a number. That said, once you start building that relationship, we still need what Dave is referring to is a unique selling proposition. So what that needs to be, and so many people get this wrong, and it's not hard, it's simple, but it's not easy, is it's really got two components. One is it has to be unique, and so many people miss it on this. They think unique is, we're a green cleaner. Well, that's not unique. Everybody says they're a green cleaner. We offer the best service out there. That's not unique. Now, if there's 100 people saying that they're the best service, technically 99 of them are lying, right? There can only be one.
Right.
And the exact same with price, which is what, if they're, again, in a vacuum, if you don't have an intentional unique selling proposition, I promise you your sales force is going to assume and act on the premise that your unique selling proposition is price, which is just going to eviscerate your opportunity to make any money. So it's got to be unique. And same thing with price. Being the second lowest is the worst place to be. Either be the cheapest, either be Walmart, where you literally are the cheapest, and by golly, you've just got so much volume and so many systems and backlog that you can run that, and there's about one company per market that can pull that off, or in my opinion, be the Nordstrom's. You don't want to be stuck at the, I can't think of a middle retailer. Don't be Olive Garden, right? Right at the middle where there's 1,000 people with them. Be the Ruth's Chris, where you're right at the top end, or the McDonald's, where you're selling a lot of 99-cent burgers. All that to say, your unique selling proposition probably shouldn't be price. And if it is price, you absolutely have to be the cheapest, and almost never are you going to be the cheapest, because there's some Yahoo that just got in the business, doesn't know what he's doing, and he's actually the cheapest, even though he'll be out of business next year. Today, he's the cheapest. So long story short, unique is key. Low price could be unique. If you actually are the low price, that is unique because you're the only one, but it's a terrible business model. Something like green cleaning, or we're the best, or people care more, or junk that everybody says, not unique. It has to be something different. The second piece is it has to be a value to the customer, right? You could say, we're unique. All of our equipment is gold plated. Well, that is absolutely unique. I promise you none of your customers or none of your competitors have that, but your customers are going to go, that means nothing to me. Why would that just sounds like I'm going to pay more for nothing. Why would I want that? So a value to your customer, Can be stuff like, and this is where it can absolutely get magical when you match it with the conversation we talked about before, when you're under the iceberg and having that educational process. Say you're the only one that offers a money back guarantee or a spectacular double your money back guarantee. Or if we make a mistake, we're going to come out and do some free cleaning or window cleaning or some twist on that that nobody else offers. If you're educating your customers that, hey, not only should you have a money back guarantee, but we should do all the vetting of it and we check our own stuff. And sometimes if we didn't do a good job and we find it, you don't say anything, we're going to send you back a check or discount your bill or something that's absolutely unique that your customer is, that has value to me. The fact that they're not that you... They want a free cleaning, but the fact that you're on top of it, you put your money where your mouth is and you've got a system behind it, all these things can be of value to your customer. And if you educate them on that and you're the only one in town doing it, just like when Dave said, when it comes to pricing, they're like, well, of course we want the lowest price, but they need to meet the criteria. Are they uniformed employees? Do they have picture IDs? Do they use this kind of a chemical that maybe only you guys use? Do they have this guarantee that you know that nobody has? So you want to kind of set the buying parameters in your customer's mind and educate them in a way that, of course, is best for them, but also makes it not just an unfair fight, makes you the only guy that's even qualified to get in the ring. Questions, thoughts, or rude remarks, Dave, before we move on?
Just that, I mean, you and I are on the exact same page. You know, the difficult thing that we faced is how do you convince your salespeople of that? You and I believe it, but, well, yeah, you know, you're not out there selling, Dave. You know, they just want a number and how do you really drive, that communication to give them the confidence that I can sell on value?
I wish I could show you a screenshot because I've got little bullet points in order that I want to talk about. I've talked about the three. The last one is exactly what you talked. We haven't set it up, but that's exactly the last point I wanted to make before we hit the lightning round. So I have found in, decades in a business and hundreds of employees in and out, whether it's a customer or an employee, the most frustrating task and the biggest fool's errand I've ever attempted to go on is to convince somebody to do something that they don't think is in their best interest or they don't think is a good idea. What I found is an easy task that gives me energy and gets a lot better response is to help people understand what it is, how I can bring value to them. So I used to, when I was young, it's embarrassing to admit, but I thought, I give you money, I'm quote unquote the boss, you're quote unquote the employee, so you shut up and sit down, I tell you what to do and you do it, right? Obviously, we get into business, we have employees, we tell them what to do and of course they do it. You know, 6 seconds later, I realized, okay, that's not working. That's not the case at all. And I realized I had to kind of, and I don't like using the word sell because it has a lot of negative connotations, but in my world, it doesn't. I'd have to sell my employees with the same vigor and effort and intensity and passion I sold my customers, that I sold my prospective employees, that I sold my vendors or anyone in the community, I kind of treated the same. So I've always tried to work out with the salespeople this kind of conversation of A, and this is touching on a lot of stuff, so I'm going to hit it quick and we're going to go to the lightning round. A, I only want to get people that believe in the core values that I've got, right? So if I have a sales force or someone that wants to join my sales force or stay in my sales force that has this prices it, low prices the way, price, that's how we do business, I'm probably going to exit them from my organization. They're probably going to be a better fit at Walmart or somewhere where that's their philosophy. So I learned early and often, we don't try and bend that kind of square peg into my round hole. We transition him to a place that's going to fit. With the remaining folks that do believe that, but get, I don't want to say confused, but kind of get bright, shiny object syndrome and listen to their customers with, I got a price and I got to have this. And those customers aren't mad. They're just uneducated. They think they do want the lowest price just because no one's taken the time to educate them what they have. But once I've got those people that have those same core beliefs as I do, is I work really hard to make sure that they see it in their best interest. I did a lot of the company needs this and we believe this and we want, and this is what's best for the company with this ill-founded assumption that they gave two rats asses about what the company, what I wanted. And then I started realizing all they cared about how does that relate with them. So the conversations changed to, what are you looking for in your life? And I would do even quarterly reviews. And this is for a sales team under like a dozen. After that, you need a sales manager, but, and just depending on, you know, how much of your time is sales management, but somebody, whether it's you or not, could be doing quarterly review meetings. And I'd have two sets of goals. One would be business and one would be personal. And I'd hold them accountable on both levels. So if they're trying to get their master's degree or get their pilot's license or have a baby or whatever, totally personal, we would hold them accountable to that the same way that we would hold them accountable to professional goals. And the conversations were always, are we on the same page? What tools do you need to get this? And I was always trying to help them understand how our goals and what we wanted aligned, as opposed to just shut up, sit down, and do this. Final thing is, I'd always, at the very minimum, try and understand why they wanted the process that they wanted. 20% of the time, my process was wrong, theirs was right. And I could say, well, great, no wonder you don't want to do that. It's stupid. And I've been asking you, the system that we've created is dumb. We're going to fix the system and make it smarter. 80% of the time, that wasn't the case. But when they were consulted and we explained to them, we tried that, we'd love to do that, here's why we can't do that, and we tried to tie that into how it can make their life better, not how it can make our life better, just the fact that they were heard and understood, even if they disagreed, they're like, okay, at least I get why I'm doing this. We found that they'll go a lot further faster. So that's like, gosh, I could probably do a 2-day seminar on that. It's the best I can do in about 98 seconds. Any questions or thoughts before I hit the lightning round, my friend?
No, that's good.
Good. I am going to shut up and let the smart guy on the call talk. Dave, I'm going to give you three quick questions. You're going to give me three quick answers. Question number one, what's the best piece of advice you've received personally or professionally?
I would say the best piece of advice was that as a leader, so this is professionally, but it translates to personal, I'm sure. And that was, I was sitting in college, and one of my professors said, always be working yourself out of your position, or, you know, working yourself out of a job. And boy, I've built my career on that. So when, you know, anytime you come into a new professional position or a role, you know, the job of the leader is not to just do that for the rest of your life. The job of the leader is to refine it, to develop it, but then ultimately find someone that can do it even better. And you know, I've always sort of bet on, well, if I find that person that's better than me at this, there'll be more opportunity. And it really works out. And you know, when you can get all your employees thinking that way, the growth that you can have is just incredible.
Not just the growth, but the lifestyle. It is a lot more fun going into that work environment than to kind of a command and control, more
Absolutely.
Traditional work environment. Yeah, great
Absolutely.
Answer, man. I like that. All right, quick, second question. And I'm really dying because I know you've got a dearth of experience. What's the biggest mistake you've made in the cleaning business that we can all maybe save ourselves some headache on?
There are so many.
I know, it's tough to choose, isn't it?
You know, the biggest mistake was underestimating the importance of process. You know, I think when we first got into it, we thought, well, how tough can that be? I mean, you know, I have to sweep my carpet at home, and I have to, you know, clean my bathrooms, and it's like, this is going to be a piece of cake. And everyone probably has an idea of what clean is. But if that doesn't match what you're selling, and if you can't deliver it consistently, boy, you know, we stubbed our toes a lot. We've, you know, I hate to admit it, lost accounts because we weren't consistent. And we didn't have refined processes. So, you know, we've spent, the most recent time really saying, what is our process? How can we standardize? How can we systematize so that not only can we deliver that great service, but things flow through the business that much easier when it's always done the same way. An employee, you can move from one account to another. Sure, it's a different place, and there are uniquenesses in each building, but they know that this is our, you know, rag system. This is our chemical system. This is the process when we clean a restroom. This is the process when we do general office cleaning. It can really supercharge your ability to train and ramp up employees. And then, you know, we're always looking to keep our customers. You know, it's not getting them, it's keeping them. And I think that quality and consistency go hand in hand, and the foundational piece is process.
Yeah, for everybody that's a longtime listener is going, this guy's a shill. Mike hired him to come on and say the crap that he always says. And I promise this is the opinions of Dave do not express those. They actually exactly express those of the host, but this isn't a paid endorsement, or not endorsement, but you know, I'm like, hey, why do I have to do my job? I'll just hire Dave and relax. Well, he says brings the heat. All right, last question, my friend. What's one idea, and again, this could be personal or professional, just something really quickly and easily implementable that Clean Nation can put into practice right now that'll bring a small or big difference and improvement to their business or their lives?
Yeah, and you sort of touched on this with the quarterly reviews, but engage with your employees. Have a plan for them and tell them what that is. And it doesn't have to be some complex roadmap for their entire career. Heck, we're trying to change companies. So, you know, the career path of today has got to be different tomorrow because the business is going to be different tomorrow. But when employees know that there is a plan for them and it's a two-way street. So like you said, hey, you want to know some of their personal goals. That engagement can create more energy in your organization overnight than anything else.
And I couldn't agree. And again, just like I mentioned to, I think, your first piece, it's fun. It's so much more fun to deal with people that you know and love and care about on a personal level. And you don't have to go over there for Christmas, but just know that this is not, you know, two hands and a unit of work, but this is Bob who's got, you know, a kid on the way, and he's always wanted to be able to, you know, get his black belt, and he's working towards that, and he's got some professional goals, and he's got some personal goals, and that's just it's a lot better way to live, and by golly, is it more profitable. Dave, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sharing your passion, your experience, your desire to grow.
I appreciate you.
I know that Clean Nation appreciates you. Clean Nation, when you want to check out Dave's show notes page and discover everything you need to grow your cleaning company, growmycleaningcompany.com. Leave your questions, your comments, your rude remarks. I will see you there.
Congratulations. You are now 16% smarter. Still can't get enough cleaning goodness? Go to www.growmycleaningcompany.com for more of the good stuff. Ever want to be rich and famous? Owners of cleaning companies, as well as industry experts, can apply to be featured on the show by emailing our producer, Natalie, at support@growmycleaningcompany.com. Until then, don't miss out on all the latest cleaning industry lovin' at www.growmycleaningcompany.com. Check it out now.